Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OhioFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OhioFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
For the ones who get going when the going gets tough, and the ones who know we're tougher together. For the pathfinders breaking new ground, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as fast access to experts and 24/7 customer support. Because we know you have people depending on you, so you can always depend on us. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
All right, film study with Ken Cusick once again. We get to talk offense in the Ravens' victory 21-0 in week six. And I guess we'll look a little bit forward to the Saints game, though you probably should have listened to the episode before this, where we went an hour and 45 minutes looking ahead to the Saints game. So, Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I just want to stress how great that episode was yesterday that we released, that people should definitely be checking that one out and sharing that one over the next few days while they get ready for the Saints game.
Lots of fun, certainly. Deuce Windham, very knowledgeable guy about the Saints and a lot of ins and outs of the personnel. These episodes have been fun to make, and I think that when you listen to them, you definitely gain a lot more insight into the opponent, which I think is a fun thing to do around the league.
Right. Of course, and that's why we do it each week, the Know Your Foe episode. I think we only missed one foe this year, and we'll make that up later in the season, I believe. So we have already broken down the defense. We looked ahead. Let's look back one more time, and let's look at this offense. So just in general, we talk about how great, amazing the defense was. The offense got this 21-0 game. In general, do you think they just, once they got to 21, they said, all right, that's enough, we can just run the ball?
They slowed the game down a lot, and the Ravens ran 72 offensive plays in this game to 40 by the Titans. And as great as the defensive performance was, you can't have a 40-snap defensive game without having an offense that sustains some drives that are very time-consuming. And the Ravens were excellent at that. And that first drive of the game where the Ravens converted all five of their third down opportunities, we're going to talk through a little bit of that as we go here, that really set the tone for the whole game. They ended up 12 for 17 on third down. That's just an incredible outlier of a result. A few years ago, they were 14 for 21 in a game at Pittsburgh, but the 12 for 17, as far as percentages go, has got to be up there near the top in Ravens history. Truly exceptional, you just don't get it. But like the defensive performance, I mean, just for both of those things to happen in the same game, just outrageous outliers.
Yeah. There's a few things we're gonna get to. Third down's one of the things, because they came into this game really strong on third downs.
Yeah, the Ravens have been good on the third down all year, and you know it's they've been great at stopping third down and good at converting third down, and that's trend certainly continued in this one. They held the Titans to 1 for 10 on third down, and on third down the Titans had 10 plays for minus 19 yards. So really loving the defensive situational packages on third down, but I'm also really loving the way the Ravens have been able to convert this year. A lot of it is throws to the sticks, but as we'll see in a moment, a couple of these plays, particularly on this first drive, were throws not to the sticks that were converted after the catch. And so having a nice mix of ways you can get it done is always nice.
Right. So, right. 12 for 17 on third down. You want to talk about that first drive in the third down conversions?
I really think it's worth going over play by play here. So let's talk about the first drive in general. So it came out swinging with the long pass to Crabtree down the left sideline for 21 yards, I think it was. That was really their big play of the drive. They didn't have any other really big plays. The Titans were then able to get them to third down five times. All right. Now, one of the things, when your team doesn't get off the field on third down, what do? You scream at the TV set. You yell expletives. That is normal, right? Everybody does that. Well, anyway, right. Normal for me. And for the players on the field, very demoralizing. And you get more and more tired, obviously, the more plays you play consecutively. That would be true regardless of the down, but it certainly is more true when you have consecutive third downs being converted and you end up with a 15, 17, 18-play drive. Let's talk about the third down specifically to happen. So immediately after, they had a 21-yard play, and then they got him to third and 10. The Titans got the Ravens to third and 10. Good chance to put him out, but Allen caught a pass 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Little swing pass. Now, this is the kind of play in the past we would have said, Joe, got to throw the ball to the sticks. But Allen rambled for 17 yards, and there was really no one in his path. No one had a reasonable chance to get him before the sticks. He converted by a yard with a 17-yak from 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage to be 1 yard past the marker, to be clear about that. And that was the first conversion. So that's great. Actually felt kind of lucky to convert that play, but anytime you extend a drive, good news. The next play, they lined up third and one, and this was a 6:51 to go. And I took a picture of this and I included it in the article, but it's almost like the Titans conceded the first down. Effectively, they left the right A and B gaps, those are the gaps between center and guard and between guard and tackle, both open. You may as well have just given an automatic quarterback sneak call at that point. The Titans called the play for the Ravens, effectively. And sure enough, Flacco ran the QB sneak. And instead of getting his usual 1.6 yards, he got 3 yards on the play. And very rare, but actually one of the linemen, it might have been two, threw a combination block on that play, which is almost impossible to do on a QB sneak. That means you block someone at the line of scrimmage to help pin someone, and then you go to level two and make a second block. Because the Titans left it so open, they did that. Take a look at the article if you want to see how they were lined up that way, or just go back to your DVR, Game Pass, whatever you've got, and take a look at the play itself. But the Titans were not prepared to defend it. Very strange for Dean Pees that he was not prepared to defend a third and one like that, but that's how it ended up.
Right.
We go a little further in the drive.
Yep.
Q1 507. We got third and five, and Flacco again threw short of the marker on a little outlet pass for Allen. He was laid out of the backfield. Throws only to the line of scrimmage, so he's got 5 yards to make after the catch, and he gets 6 after the catch. So twice in a row, Buck Allen bailed him out with yards after the catch to make a first down. And it's just really embarrassing when your defense is allowing passes like that. You can't get it stopped. So more plays. Then on third and, let's see, I don't remember the third down. I don't have it written down here. Doesn't matter that much. Flacco again went for Allen up the left sideline. But Jayon, that pass went incomplete, but Jayon Brown in the middle of the field had already held Andrews. Now, it was kind of unfortunate that Flacco's didn't see how open Andrews was even after Jayon Brown's hold, because Jayon Brown slipped right off Andrews, and it was an opportunity to Flacco hit Andrews for a play of 15 or 20 plus yards, and he didn't do it. Threw the ball for Allen, incomplete, penalty, extends the drive anyway, so another conversion, very nice. Then on third and goal from the 4-yard line, of course, Flacco threw the touchdown pass to Crabtree by the left pylon, and you know, again, 5 straight third downs made, I'd just be beside myself and screaming at the TV set watching that.
Yeah, and we, as Raven fans, we've been there before where it seems like our defense cannot get off the field. And it you know, it demoralizes the offense to just watch that and watch it fall apart. And of course, it tires out the defense, and they're just worn, and they feel like they can never get off the field. And then the fan base is completely frustrated. Long drives like that do a lot for momentum and the moral support, I guess, of your team.
All true. And the offense then comes back on the field. There's tremendous pressure on them not to have a 3-and-out immediately after a drive like that. And so, you know, there's pressure all the way around. When you give up a long drive, you're always in danger of giving up 2 long ones in a row. So, or maybe another way to say it is, when you give up a long drive, you're only one drive away from giving up 2 long in a row. So the Titans did come back out. They were on the field for a 3-play drive, including a penalty. They had 2 sacks in a row, and the Ravens got the ball back immediately and had another touchdown drive. So the game was effectively over from my point of view at that point, with the Ravens up 14-0 and playing good defense. Right. But very, very impressive offensive showing in terms of getting third downs converted.
Right, and it seemed like after that point, that's when the Ravens decided to get the run game going, which we haven't had much luck with this season. And I was hearing it immediately after the game. Look, the Ravens ran the ball a bunch and we won. And it's the most irritating thing in the world to me.
Now that you know the magic formula, right? No, the Ravens won and they ran the ball a lot is what you should have told them. But,
oh, I did. And I was told that I don't understand, and that it's clearly the magic formula is run the ball, you win.
Okay, so it was all setting up that first drive. All those third down plays and all the success there was set up by the 2 and 3 yard runs that the Ravens had to get. I get it. Okay.
Yep. So you were talking about pressure. How about pressure on Joe and ample time and space?
No, he was pretty good in that category. The offensive line, first of all, they did not allow a sack in the game, so that's terrific. They only allowed him to be knocked down one time, and it had to be at midfield because he had a funny Titan color paint. And that's one of the fields that I don't know why in the NFL, but that field bleeds a lot. It's natural grass, of course, and their paint just always seems to bleed out of the jerseys whenever anybody gets taken down there. So anyway, he carried that around, but he actually was only hit once in the game. Really didn't even suffer that much pressure in the game, but he had 19 out of 37 ample time and space opportunities, which is good. And he did okay with those, just basically an average yardage total. It was 9 yards actually better than his opportunity set would have dictated, giving his own historical norms. But if when you think about the weather and you know, it was raining there and whatnot, I think that's actually a pretty good total for that. I'd upgrade it certainly from average to good from what he did. The only interception, of course, Flacco threw was a deflected ball. A lot of people say it hit the ground, including some players on the field. That should have been automatically reviewed, but for some reason it was not. Not sure why, but in the end, doesn't matter the outcome. It will matter in terms of Flacco's stats because it's on his permanent record, of course. But a very good game from Joe, and honestly, looking at that questionable interception, not just because it hit the ground, but also because it was a deflected pass, I thought he played very well in this game.
Yeah, that interception confused me because I was under the impression that all turnovers were reviewed.
Yes, that's right. They're supposed to be, and I don't know why that one wasn't, because the Ravens were calling for it, and that should be enough. If right. You know, they I think the procedure is that the officials call up to a replay booth and they say, is there anything to indicate we should be looking at this? And then they get a text message back saying yay or nay, and then they go look at the video if that's the case. But they must have gotten somebody in the booth to basically tell them, no, nothing to look at here, go ahead.
All right, that guy must have not had that big of a TV, because everyone else on Twitter and in my home thought that ball moved when it touched the ground.
There you go.
All right, well, either way, it's continuing to be good Joe and a different Joe than we had last year, which is really helping. They also scaled back on the Lamar trick plays.
Yeah, not too much Lamar in this game. We did see Lamar get on late in the game for a 22-yard run, so that was nice. Right. I think he might have been on for two or three snaps. We can check that out while I'm looking at
right.
this. But the 22-yard run was a nice big deal. It was well blocked up the left sideline. He made a nice little move at the beginning of the run and ended up getting there. Lamar Jackson only on the field for two plays in this one, so good game for him.
Right, the one run up the left side was good, and it got him good yardage, and that's what we've been wanting to see from one of these Lamar plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. He hadn't broken one today.
Right, his first one, and he got close to the end zone on that one. Do you think that the Lamar plays were scaled back because the game was so dominated by the Ravens, or do you think offensively they're starting to scale back Lamar now that they kind of see what they've got?
Well, this is a game, and the Saints are coming off a bye this week. So this Titans game was a game where I thought they might have rested some people early. That would be particularly true of the defense, but it also could have been true of Flacco, say, any of the wide receivers. Maybe give Edwards most of the carries at the end of the game, which they did. He ended up with 10 carries in this game, and Collins and Allen got shut down fairly early in those terms.
Well, they had the opportunity that they could have sat Flacco down.
Yeah, they did. They could have done it. And they could have gotten some more playing time out of Jackson, and it would have made a lot of sense, I think. But it's fine. Joe had a streak going of 25 games with 25 completions. It would be kind of nice if that ended. I mean, from my point of view, it's not really a good thing. It's not something the Ravens should be trying to do. But he ended up extending the record with a little forward pitch play to Chris Moore, who was coming across. And
okay.
You really think of it as a handoff, but it's a forward pass.
Right.
He had another pass that was actually a lateral, too, in the game, by the way, a play to Collins on the left side. So a little bit of weirdness going around in what the Ravens did in this game.
All right, let's get to the offensive line, and let's start with Stanley.
Okay, so Stanley had a reasonably good game. There's some anomalies to what happened in this game. He had 9 missed blocks. But when I really break that down, it's a lot of blocks that are of the non-costly type. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. A costly missed block is one where you miss a block in pass protection that might have turned into a pressure, say, but Flacco got the ball out quickly, or you get beat for some other reason at the line of scrimmage and at the point of attack. Those are bad missed blocks. The kind of not bad missed block, which is what he had, are 4 blocks in level 2, 4 movement to level 2 where he couldn't find a block, and that's okay. It's not ideal. You'd like him to make a contribution, but it's not a serious error that's going to cause a negative play or cause a high variance play. He had 2 cases where he failed to make a block when he pulled. Both times he was tripped up, once by the defender, once by his own offensive player, in terms of getting to the spot. And on the offensive player, was on the right side on a play that Brian Baldinger called out as being really bad scheme, where Andrews blocked Jarrell Casey, and it was intended to be a trap play. And we had, from left to right, we had Stanley moving. He fell over that pile. And really was a train wreck of a play all the way around. But I like the idea of trapping Casey, by the way. I think that's a good idea, but you have to have space to work with to do it. You have to give Collins space to the outside to make a move, and it just wasn't there. So I agreed with most of Baldinger's comments, but that particular play, I kind of like the scheme there. He had 2 cases where he whiffed At the line of scrimmage on DaQuan Jones, who had a pretty decent game against the Ravens in general. And then he had one other whiff in level two. So, you know, in general, his nine missed blocks weren't all that costly. He did allow 3.5 pressures in the game, which is not terrible if you don't allow other events at tackles over 71 plays. Now, remember, 71 plus one kneeled, so that doesn't get scored, and that's why the difference between those two. Overall, Stanley at 0.72 per play, and that's a C after adjustment, before adjustment, either way at tackle. So a solid game from Stanley, not quite up to the level he'd been at, but nonetheless, I think a game that could be underrated based on the lack of costliness of those missed blocks.
All right. How about Lewis? Clearly, he went out at the end of the game.
Yeah, very, very scary injury. And, you know, he missed the last, 14, 15 snaps, whatever it was. And, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, you really hope that when he's lying there on the stretcher and, you know, nobody really knows what's happened, that there's somebody, you know, we've all seen Jerry Maguire probably. And, you know, when his friend is lying on the field and he can't get up, you know, Jerry Maguire calls the family and whatnot. And you just hope there's somebody in that stadium who's at least getting in touch with Lewis's family on that. A very scary moment.
There were enough people on the field surrounding him that someone should have been able to make a phone call.
Yeah, well, there you go, and I hope they were. But anyway, Lewis had a pretty good game. He had a full pass rush charge on a pressure that he gave up when he couldn't handle a stunt by Arakpo, who obviously is quick and difficult to handle. Not the pass rusher he once was, but still pretty good. He missed 3 pulls out of 10, so he had a nice opportunity set on pulls. He didn't have any negative events on those pulls, so that worked out okay. Made a couple blocks in level 2. Overall, he scored at 0.79 per play with an adjustment that brings him up to a B. Very solid. I think that you know, this is his second consecutive B game, so I'm hoping that he's a little bit out of the spotlight in terms of who might be in danger next or who's in jeopardy, because the Ravens have some good backups now. They still have Brown sitting on the bench, and they had Bozeman, who we're going to talk about a little bit, had a pretty good game in relief of Lewis. We can talk about that, in fact, right now. He came in for 14 snaps, made 13 of his blocks, 2 pulls, did not have a block in level 2, but converted both of those pulls, and looked to be have some of the mobility they would want in that guard. That's something that I think is keeping Bradley off the field is I think he will have difficulty zone blocking. He's about a quarter step too slow, which is all you need to be too slow to not be able to zone block effectively. So, you know, he's a guy that they're going to be able to deal with that limited mobility somehow, hopefully, and find a way to use the additional power he brings to the table.
All right. Skura had a bad game.
Yes, he did. So second consecutive bad game for Matt Skura. 4 pressures allowed at center, which is really bad, and 2 holding flags to boot. So he came in at an F, a high F, as it turned out, about 6 points short of scoring. It still hasn't been that one completely fall off the table kind of game so far. Nobody scored in the 40s or 30s as a, you know, we've had plenty of times in the past in the Gradkowski era or O'Neal Cousins or Hurst when in some of his early efforts at left tackle and right tackle. We just haven't had a game like that. But this is a game, a second consecutive F for Skura that definitely brings to question his security at the position again. And, you know, 2 weeks ago we were saying no danger. You know, he's played well in 3 of the 4 games, and, you know, things change quickly, a couple Fs, and all of a sudden he's back on the hot seat, I think, among players on the offensive line.
That's unfortunate. Marshall Yanda is still playing well. I guess last year declaring him done, we're wrong.
Well, he had a serious injury. That ankle injury was one of these things that's just, you never know at his age if you're going to rehab properly from an injury, but he's had a little bit of trouble pulling this year. They don't pull too much from right to left just because they had some of their bigger linemen on the right side, and Lewis has been more effective so far at pulling. So I guess they want to try that. But Yanda pulled 5 times in this game and only got 1 point. And in the last game, he only got 1 point out of 4 pulls. So when you're looking at that, that's the only part about his game that's weak. Otherwise, he's still scoring very high. He had .89 raw score in this. Only had one negative event the entire game, which is a shared penetration. So that's half of a run play that went for a loss. And he ended up with an A again. Another day at the office, he had three really gorgeous highlight blocks, including a double pancake. So you don't see that very often. You want to look at his highlight blocks. I'm not going to describe each one. Just go to the article, look at them again. You've got timestamps there, and that's an opportunity to use your Game Pass subscription.
All right. Hurst, you've been praising Hurst.
Yeah, so I've had problems with Hurst's grading to date, but there's nothing you can take away from him in terms of this game. I thought he'd kind of been given a ton of help in order to maintain a C-plus average, kind of like a way over-tutored player in his television class getting a C-plus with all the help in the world. But Hurst, in this case, had a great game, the best game, in fact, of his entire career. Surrendered two pressures, both to Jayon Brown. One to Jayon Brown, one to Arakpo. But those were his only negative events. He missed three blocks in the game, but he otherwise did very well. Had three very nice highlight blocks, including the big block that sprung Collins on that 13-yard weave-through traffic TD. It's Hurst's combination block in level two that really sprung Collins, and so that was impressive. He's not in any jeopardy at this point, which means there's a big logjam on the offensive line at this point. If Lewis is not able to go in this next game, I don't think there's a good reason why they would move Hurst from right tackle to left guard. I think it's more likely they'll do exactly what they did in this game, which was insert Bradley Bozeman at left guard. So if I had to just guess how this is going to play out, I would guess Bozeman ends up starting at left guard in this game. We see Hurst again at right tackle, and Orlando Brown continues to be the sixth lineman.
All right. But it should give Orlando Brown, even if he doesn't get into that starting rotation, he should be getting more snaps this week with Alex Lewis out.
Well, he might. We'll see if they do any rotational play. With Bozeman in there, you never know. I mean, if Bozeman stumbles in the game, I think it's possible they'll make an in-game change where they move Hurst to left guard. That's possible. But it's just, I think it becomes less likely. They'll also have another presumably interior offensive lineman activated if Lewis is deactivated for that game. So that could be Ronis Grassu is active for this one. So there are various possibilities. I think the likelihood of Orlando Brown being used as anything but the jumbo sixth lineman is probably pretty low this week. But maybe it happens. Maybe injury demands it at some point. And eventually he's going to get on the field. It's just a nice problem to have. They had the problem at one point with Chris Chester years ago that he was a pretty good lineman who was just not quite good enough to play on a team that had five very good starting linemen. And he ended up getting a big contract from Washington and playing well for many years in the league. But Orlando Brown, I think he will get on the field by injury at some point. He won't be stuck on the sidelines for this entire year.
All right. As we record, this is Wednesday night, and Alex Lewis still has not practiced this week, correct?
No, he did not practice. So Harbaugh came out in the interview today and said that he had what in old-timey terms was a pinched nerve. So maybe they call it a nerve impingement or whatever they call it today. Well, hopefully it's not a serious, lasting injury. I think some of the things we heard about Mariota in the game really kind of scare you about the impact of that, and it should just scare you normally if there's a neck injury involving any kind of nerve pinching. But whether it's discomfort or feeling that he needs back, hopefully he'll recover from that and be right as a person before he's right as a player as well.
Right, sure. A few more guys I want to talk about before we get to our MVPs. And I want to talk first with the running game, since the Ravens did focus on this a little bit this week, and Alex Collins and what he's doing.
So Alex Collins had 19 for 54. Not a great game. Collins is not getting the number of easy level two opportunities he was getting last year. Part of the problem is just the power run game from left to right is not as effective. Don't have as bulky a right tackle over there. They had Austin Howard last year. They don't have as effective a puller, although Lewis hasn't been terrible. He hasn't been quite as good as Hurst was last year in terms of pulling from left to right. So those are a couple of small things. Baldinger pointed out some scheme things that he didn't like with Collins running into numbers on the left side, another one with a tight end being utilized in a funny way. That Roman's run scheme involves a lot of one gap pulls as opposed to long pulls. So long pulls are what you're used to from a guard, where he pulls from left to right or right to left typically and goes at least two gaps worth before he makes a block. A short pull is a one gap pull, generally speaking, where you cut around one player and make a block. And often that'll be to create some sort of a trapping situation by a tight end, and a tackle will move around that tight end in order to make a block on the edge. So they tried some of that in this game, and honestly didn't work very well. Baldinger really called it out as being bad scheme. For most part, I don't disagree with his comments. I do like one trap they made on Casey, I think we talked about earlier, so I won't belabor that. But Collins really also, when he has had level two opportunities, he's broken some tackles this year and gotten some extra yards out of it. That's both on pass and run plays. He just needs more total level two opportunities. I really liked his weave through the maze run for the 13-yard TD. Nice to see him have the speed to the edge to get that second TD. So he did some good things in this game, and just not enough level two opportunities.
All right. Did Buck Allen have the same issues with the line?
Buck Allen only had one carry in the game. Okay, so he had one carry for 1 yard, and that was it. But Buck Allen's main usage was as the pass receiver on that very first drive, where he got two receptions that were short of the stick and took him for first downs. And then he had one more reception, I think, in the game. I think he had three total receptions. But honestly, he didn't play all that much. He was in later in the game. He was in for a QB sneak and whatnot. But let's see, he played 28 snaps total in the game. So that's actually a very low touch total for Allen to get in a game where he was in that much. So a little bit odd, probably, that he did not get the ball more.
All right. This was a fun week for sports talk because Michael Crabtree went from the villain that nobody liked in Baltimore to the star that everyone said can catch anything.
Well,
short memories in Baltimore.
Okay, glad to see him turn it around. And, yeah, there's hopefully a lot of short memories in the NFL because things go wrong and then they go right. And, you know, we're terrible and never going to win another game after Cincinnati. And then we're great. And then we lose to the Browns and we're never going to win another game. And all of a sudden we've got the best defense in football again. So, things bounce all over the place. But Michael Crabtree had a lot of problems, of course, in those rain games prior. Was leading the NFL in drops with 8. Didn't drop the ball this week. Caught 6 of 9 targets and for 93 yards. Got open well on the left sideline. That's saying something for Crabtree. A couple times on the left sideline, once behind the defender, once in front of the defender on the comeback. You really like to see a mix of those because that means Crabtree is being able to sell the hook or the stop and go. He did a good job of getting open on the near pylon for the touchdown catch. So a lot of good stuff from Crabtree, and hopefully he can keep it up and be a productive receiver.
All right. I like that. I hope we see that continue. I feel like we'll need it every week. I feel like we need him to catch the ball like that. Let's get to the MVPs, and then we'll get to a few mailbag questions.
Okay, well, sure. I'll go first, like we usually do. My third number three MVP is James Hurst in this game with his best career game, only the second A he's ever had at tackle. The last one was in the infamous kick six game where Will Hill returned the blocked kick by Brent Urban at Cleveland on 11/30/15 for the game-winning touchdown that improved the Cleveland draft status considerably. So that was the last time, and he very, very well-earned number three star in this game.
All right, I marked down Cyrus Jones as my number three. Nothing super exciting, but it's nice to have a kick returner that doesn't just fair catch constantly that we can trust to maybe do a little something with the ball.
Yeah, that was exciting. I agree. Like, that's a good pick. Crabtree's my number two guy with 6 of 9 catches, as we just talked about. Good turnaround game for him. I would hope that in a normal game, his performance would be on a borderline, be an honorable mention for the MVP of a game. But, you know, in this game, it wasn't a lot of real standout offensive players, and this is where he belongs at number two.
Yeah, my number two is another receiver that had a good game, Willie Snead.
Great pick.
Who is really turning in to be that middle-of-the-field guy for Flacco.
Yeah, go-to guy, and I think we talked about this a little bit, either with Deuce or maybe on a previous show, but the ball gets delivered on time, and with the shorter routes and Flacco's arm strength, ball placement very important, And Snead's got to have the good hands to handle it, because if he doesn't, good chance for an interception in the middle of the field if that ball gets deflected. But so far, all been good news for Snead in terms of his catches. Yeah. So I like that pick too.
Yeah, I do think we learned that Willie Snead is not that fast, though.
Yeah, he certainly said so on TV, and I agree. You know, he's got problems. It was him that the ball was bounced off for the interception, wasn't it? I mean, it was a contested catch, obviously, so it wasn't an easy one. But it was him, I believe, who had the ball bounce off of the interception by Byard.
All right.
My number one is Yanda. Continues to put up week after week. We never include him in the MVPs. Sometimes we toss him in there with the offensive line as a whole. But great season, obviously, for Marshall. And the consistency that he provides is just so outstanding. And not seeing any obvious decline in play from him.
All right, and I gave my number one to Joe Flacco, who's continuing to manage this offense really well this season.
All right, well, that's fair enough. Joe, again, proving he's very weather-resistant, and that's something I think the Ravens want on Sunday. They would like a extreme weather game. Now, we're not asking for a hurricane or anything, but if we could have a little rain, maybe 20-mile-an-hour winds, I think that would really help against the Saints.
You just want Raven fans to be wet constantly, don't you?
I'm one of those Raven fans. I'm happy to be wet in the name of winning. So
I haven't checked the weather yet, but take your poncho, even if it says it's beautiful weather, because you never know.
52 for a high during game time is what I'm seeing.
Okay. All right. It's starting to get cold in here. Let's get to the mailbag. This is where you send in your questions on Twitter using the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag, or write them on the Russell Street Report forum, and we can find them there as well. Just a few questions today, Ken, and I want to start it with one that I can't believe we're already getting this question. It seems way too early, but here it goes. Is Hayden Hurst a bust?
You know, I'm actually concerned about what's happened with Hayden Hurst, that he's only been involved in the plays in a very limited way. He's been targeted three times in two games with one reception. They've got, a decent crew of tight ends, one through four, but maybe you got to think right now at the trade deadline to see if one of those guys could be traded. And obviously, the obvious guys are the two fourth-year guys, Boyle and Williams. You could trade one. The Ravens really seem to like the number of inline blockers they have at tight end, and I think it's actually hurting Hurst. The other thing that's hurting Hurst is that Andrews is off to a nice start, and as the receiving tight end, he's been very good at getting down the field and getting open, and that's a lot of what Hurst brings to the table. So we'll see. I do expect him to get involved in the game more. I expect him to be more of a third down target for Flacco, along with Snead, along with Andrews. To be those middle of the field guys who can convert easily on third down. A lot of those are now going to Buck Allen, as we saw in this game. So hopefully we'll see more snaps from Hurst at a bare minimum. And I don't have a snap count from this game, but I don't imagine it was too exciting.
So you don't think anything's wrong with Hurst? You think it's more of a he missed his opportunity by missing these first four games, and now it's kind of don't break what's working?
Yeah, unfortunately, the other tight ends are all playing well. So in terms of snap count, Hayden Hurst had 18 snaps, Mark Andrews 20, Max Williams 33, and Nick Boyle 47. So you can see he's getting the least playing time of those four tight ends. And, that's not where you hope your first-round pick will be at this point in the season.
Right, and he's also had the least amount to connect with Joe and work out timings with Joe, relationship with Joe, any of that stuff.
That's a good point. He had a great relationship with RG3 and with Lamar Jackson in the preseason, but you're right, not too much with Joe.
All right, next question up. I suspect this doesn't even need to be asked because you'll highlight it anyway, but late in the game, the Ravens showed Hurst at left guard and Zeus at right tackle. How did Zeus look, and can we draw any conclusions about how ready his pass blocking is and if he's available to start?
Okay, well,
you got into this a little bit.
We did. So, for starters, a little bit of a misconception. Hurst did not play any snaps at left guard. He played at right tackle for the entire game. And you're not the only one who thought they saw that, because other people have posted it all over, and it's been in, I think it might have been in The Sun, actually. They said something about it. So, I'm not trying to call anybody out. I'm just trying to say it's a common misconception. But anyway, he didn't play there. In terms of what Orlando Brown has done as a pass blocker so far this year. We have seen him for a fair amount in the Buffalo game. We've seen other snaps from him as a sixth lineman, other snaps as a fifth lineman when he came in and actually replaced Hurst on some Lamar Jackson snaps. And he's looked pretty good in those. So his offensive line scores have generally been good. I'll give you his total snaps here for the year and what I've scored him at. But he's got 44 snaps for the year with 39 blocks, 37 points, and a .84 points per play. So on an adjusted basis, a tackle, he'd be right at a low A level so far this year. So nothing wrong with what he's done. Most of the snaps came against Buffalo, where he had 25 of his 44 snaps. But he's had snaps in every game this year except for Denver, and done a little something with it. So they're trying to work him in. And whether it's Jumbo or bringing him with Lamar Jackson, I think they're trying to work him in for a few snaps every game. And he's the heir apparent, in any case, at right tackle. He'll be there soon enough.
All right. It's funny. We've got a theme of mailbag questions tonight where all the questions are kind of about getting other guys involved in the game more. And this next one from Brad comes in and asks if you have any idea if the Ravens plan to incorporate Jalen Hill or Bam Bradley on the active roster when they come off the PUP list.
Right now, I think it would be kind of difficult to get either guy in. And okay, Jalen Hill first is a cornerback. And let's talk about Jalen Hill a little bit, because last year he was one of the preseason most valuable players for the Ravens with just an outstanding preseason that was up there with Brent Urban also, who had a great one.
Right.
It really, you thought, there's our backup slot corner. Maybe there's a guy that'll get some playing time. And then they put Lardarius Webb in the role, and they finally, at midseason, decided we need to get somebody else in there, and they put Jalen Hill in for a game. And Jalen Hill played well for 8 snaps. And then they decided, nope, we think Maurice Kennedy is our guy. We'll bring him off, right, off IR. And they did. And Maurice Kennedy played very well the rest of the year. And, you know, we'll remember him probably for 2 plays. One is the touchdown pass to Decker against the Titans, which lost a very important tiebreaker game. And the other is the touchdown pass on 4th and 12, where Kennedy was asked to play safety instead of slot corner, where he played the whole year. And that was an abysmal failure, of course, too. So the truth of the matter is, in between those 2 plays, Kennedy had one hell of a year. And that included a stop against the Colts the very previous week in man coverage on the game-sealing play. So, you know, he may be back. I think he's more likely to come off injured reserve than Jalen Hill is to come off PUP. So I think the more likely thing, they have a window. If they have some injuries that occur, yeah, then maybe Jalen Hill is a possibility. I don't know actually where he is in the rehab process. He was injured, I believe, last December. So with an ACL for a corner, that can often be a longer healing process than that. He may or may not really be ready to go by the end of the season. They may have already given up this season basically to IR. You know, they certainly have the opportunity to bring Kennedy back with the current group being 4 deep. And now Averett, by the way, practiced today. I think it becomes less likely week by week without additional action on the injury list that Hill has brought back. Bam Bradley, interesting inside linebacker, played a little bit, looked really good in the preseason last year, good special teams player, and the best size and shape fit the Ravens have at inside linebacker other than their starters. But again, you've got now a couple guys who are both contributing something, Peanut and Kenny Young, both playing well. Kenny Young playing really well the whole year, but Peanut had the best game of his career in the last game with 2 sacks, a couple stops otherwise, in only 13 snaps. I mean, he looked good enough that you keep contributing with him, keep him on special teams. They have Board available for special teams, who has only played a few defensive snaps, and they have McClellan, who they really value on special teams, also an inside linebacker. So Bam Bradley probably also needs injury help in the form of somebody else getting hurt in order to come back as well. And once again, I really don't know where he is in terms of rehabbing his own injury. So I'd love to be able to give you more information. I'll just say the Ravens have really solid depth at both positions right now, and it seems to me a little bit unlikely that either guy will come back.
All right. Well, it's good. That's a good problem to have, though, is that you don't need those guys right now.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, the situation with depth is really good for the Ravens. There were only a couple of positions where, boy, if they lost that guy, it would be really terrible, or irreplaceable. There's lots of places where it'd be terrible. You really would have a hard time replacing somebody like Za'Darius Smith at this point. You can't, you know, imagine losing Terrell Suggs. But, you know, most of the other positions other than Flacco, you really, if you lost someone, it'd be very bad, but maybe you'd have a way to get by. And the Ravens have really significant depth then at a lot of positions, and cornerback being one where they've already weathered a lot of difficulty this year. So, yeah, depth is always good.
Right. All right, Ken. Well, we've got 4 days until the Ravens host the Saints for a nice 4 p.m. game, late afternoon game.
Yeah, really looking forward to that.
Right. Right.
Maybe we get a little more cold weather. Maybe it's good for a breeze. But, boy, all that does is delay the analysis period by 3 hours. I really dislike it.
That's true. That means you can't start your analysis until a little later that night.
There you go.
A long night for you. Drew Brees has never beat the Ravens. He's 0-4
right.
On the Ravens. Do you know off the top of your head, is there a quarterback who has struggled more against the Ravens than going 0-4?
No, I don't know off the top of my head. I'm trying to think of what Browns quarterback like Tim Couch or somebody like that might have gone like 1-8 or something. Yeah, I'm sure you could find
somebody. I was going to say, what Browns quarterback has gotten four starts against the Ravens?
Yeah, we'd really have to look for that. Obviously, the Browns have a long litany of quarterbacks over the years, but there might have been someone. I'm trying to think of anyone else who in the division, maybe. I mean, obviously the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh before Roethlisberger never really stayed around for too long, like Maddox or Cordell Stewart was okay against the Ravens. The Ravens were worse during his era. I'd really have to think about that one to see if I could come up with a player who meets that.
Right. Well, let's hope we make it 0-5 this week. Over the next 4 days, I'd like people to go check out BirdlandSports.com. Lots of new podcasts up there from not only Film Study, but Neutral Zone Infraction, Dade's View, Birdland BS, and Section 336 all have new episodes that have came out in the last day or two to check out. And
what was Dade's episode about this week? You tell me anything about it?
Yeah, I mean it gave his thoughts on the Owen shutout. And then looking a little ahead to Drew Brees coming into town.
All right, very good. He's a good listen and got a very well-paced voice. He's one of the only people that I can ever imagine being able to do a podcast on its own and having it be really good because he knows how to pace himself.
Yeah, and it's awesome that it's just one guy and it's the perfect length to listen to at your lunch break because it's always about 22, 23 minutes, perfect amount of time to get through lunch on one of these work days.
If you want a long two daiquiri lunch or a two margarita lunch, go ahead and listen to the Deuce Wyndham Saints
right.
preview.
Oh, that'll get your drive to work and your drive home from work.
There you go.
So, Ken, we talk a lot about Russell Street Report, and I want you to talk about that, but we never brought up the fact that you have a weekly appointment on 105.7.
That's right. So Scott and Jeremy have me on at 4 p.m. on Monday, so that's pretty cool. And the only thing I feel bad about is that I never have the offensive line scoring done by that. So I'm always referring to last week. So Hurst had his best career game, and this Monday actually is talking about all the help they were giving Hurst and how I didn't think he was really as valuable as his grade level would indicate. So I'm on a day earlier than I really have the most current information for the offensive line. So I apologize for that to the listeners, but it's, it is what it is. And I do the best I can. What I would tell you, if you're trying to quote what's going on, wait until I actually put the article out and don't try and go by what I say about the offensive line on that Monday show, because oftentimes I'm behind. And if anything I've learned over this is really only trust your scoring, don't trust your impressions about offensive line play. You really need to take the time to score it. If you're just watching a football game as you normally would and you have impressions about pressure, you'll often will miss something big, and it's worth taking the time. But thanks for mentioning that. I appreciate it. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm at Film Study Ravens, out on Russell Street Report. Go take a look. The articles are there. Lots more information, timestamps that you can go back and go into the Game Pass or whatever you like to your DVR to look at the games and gives you the transparency of how I scored things and how I review the film.
All right.
Where do they follow you, Josh?
Well, we went over Birdland Sports, but they can follow me on Twitter at Josh Soroka, Sroka. And give me a follow there, and Again, I will leave all of the film study questions that come in for you to answer, Ken. Very, very rarely do I try to answer one on Twitter because I am not the brains behind this. That is all you. So if they want a comment and an opinion, I can jump in with that. If they want hard facts, I'm leaving it to you, Ken.
Well, I appreciate that, Josh, and I couldn't do the show without you. Appreciate all the production, hard production you are going to do on this.
Oh, and I learn each week, so I'm getting better. I'm definitely paying attention to the games better now because of this show. So, all right, Ken, we'll try to stay warm and dry on Sunday, and we will talk on Monday.
Life's good, Josh. Talk to you later.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.